Okay, welcome, everyone. Good afternoon. I'm Amy Seawright, Senior Advisor and Director of the Southeast Asia Program here at CSIS, and I'm really delighted to welcome you all today to our very special Global Leaders Forum with Rini Sumarno, the Minister for State-Owned Enterprises of Indonesia. Today's event is also the official launch of our collaboration with Bank Negara Indonesia on a project that's focused on U.S.-Indonesia relations and broader U.S.-Southeast Asia economic ties. I'm thrilled that you're all here to join us to celebrate this occasion, and following Minister Rini's remarks and our discussion, we will have a public reception to formally launch this program. I hope you can join us. Before introducing the minister, I'd like to acknowledge and thank members of her extraordinary delegation for coming, including Pak Gatot and Pak Fajar from the Ministry of State-Owned Enterprises, Pak Baikuni, the President Director of BNI, Bank Negara Indonesia, Ibu Nika, the President Director of Pertamina, Pak Kartiko, President Director of Bank Mandiri, Pak Mariano, President Director of Bank BTN, Pak Alex, President Director of Telecom, Pak Tum, President Director of WIKA, and Pak Eddy, President Director of KAI. As you can see, the minister brought a very large delegation to visit CSIS this week, a number of CEOs from state-owned enterprises. They have a very busy schedule throughout the week as they will be crisscrossing the United States, visiting some headquarters of some of the United States' most important corporations. In particular, in this delegation, I'd like to single out Pak Baikuni, whose vision for the CSIS-BNI partnership is already making a significant contribution to deepening U.S.-Indonesia relations. We're incredibly grateful for this support. And finally, before I invite the minister to take the stage to deliver remarks, I have to give a brief safety announcement. In the unlikely event of an emergency, I will be your safety officer, so please follow me and other CSIS staff as we exit the building. We will probably gather at the National Geographic Building on M Street or across the street at the cathedral. But now it's my pleasure to introduce Minister Rini Sumarno, who has served as Minister for State-Owned Enterprises of Indonesia since the beginning of the Jokowi administration in October 2014. She previously served as the Chief of Staff of President Joko Widodo's transition team in 2014. And as anyone who knows Indonesia will tell you, she is quite clearly one of the most important individuals behind President Jokowi's drive to expand the economy, promote connectivity, and reduce inequality. Her current role is not her first cabinet position. Ibu Rini also served as Minister for Industry and Commerce from 2001 to 2004 under President Megawati. In addition to her time in public service, Rini Sumarno has extensive experience in business, previously holding executive leadership positions at Astra International and Citibank, among others. And she is no stranger to the United States. She was born and raised in Maryland and holds a bachelor's degree in economics from Wellesley College. And with that, it is my pleasure to introduce Minister Rini Sumarno to the podium to deliver her remarks.
Dear Amy and dear dignitaries and fellow Indonesians, ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. And thank you for inviting me to this CSIS-BNI roundtable on the U.S. Southeast Asia economics issues. And I just found out that actually not too many Southeast Asian studies are happening in Washington, so I'm glad to be one of the very few who started to have this discussion. Now, of course, then today I would like to present you about the state of Indonesia economy and the strategic role that our SOEs play and the many opportunities for investment in Indonesia. Today, Indonesia is the world's 16th largest economy and also the third fastest growing among the G20. Growth has been very stable. The economy is healthy with fiscal debt at 27% of GDP. Between 2014 and the end of 2017, Indonesians' ease of doing business ranking rose from 120 to 91 in the world. And this is one of the strive that President Jokowi continue on pushing and how to make Indonesia to be more effective, attractive to investor around the world. And the investment has increased 50%, and electrification has jumped from 84% to 95%. Poverty, unemployment, and inequality have also declined. With these encouraging developments, we are very pleased to see the global rating agencies have upgraded Indonesia's sovereign rating. And all these indicators bode well for a better and brighter future for all Indonesians. Indonesia is also ready for the digital economy. With the rollout of 3G and 4G, Indonesia has leapfrogged into the mobile internet era. In 5 years, especially in the last 3 years, internet access has jumped from 22% to 50%. This progress makes Indonesia as the fastest growing e-commerce market in Southeast Asia, with 84% growth in the past year alone. The financial technology sector is booming, with startups offering a wide array of financial services to a large and growing consumer market. We see great potential in digital economy, and SOEs Indonesia are embracing digital in a big way. We have embarked on digital transformation across all sectors, energy, financials, telecommunication, public services, and logistics. While we are very pleased with the progress over the past 3 years, we are also pragmatic about the challenges that we face. There are 5 great challenges that Indonesia must overcome, and we cannot rest until we have overcome each and every one. The first challenge is inequality. We will continue reducing poverty. The second challenge is energy and food security. How to reduce Indonesia's dependency on imports for energy and food. The third challenge is infrastructure, as Indonesia must significantly increase land, sea, and air connectivity, and also increase the electrification across the country. Fourth is the financial inclusion, ensuring that all Indonesians have access to financial services. And last challenge, but most importantly, is increasing the human resource quality. To overcome our challenges and take Indonesia's growth to the next level, the government has created a long-term national development master plan. The master plan balances between macroeconomic goals and social development goals. We want to improve competitiveness and human resources quality, connect the entire archipelago through land, sea, and air, and ensure inclusive growth for all. The master plan targets include growth of around 6 to 7% of GDP per capita, and per capita targets is 72 million rupiah, or around $5,000. Reduce inflation to 3.5, which at the present moment is about 3.6, while about 5 years ago still about 7.5%. And reduce poverty to about 7 to 8%, at the present moment is about 10%. And most importantly, increase the tax ratio to about 16%. At this present moment is about 12%. Now, where does the SOE stands in the Indonesian economy? About $151 billion, or 15% of the country's GDP, is generated by SOEs. The listed SOE represent about 25% of the total Indonesian market capitalization. Moreover, the collective asset of Indonesian SOE amounts to around $538 billion, meaning that as a group, our SOE are bigger than Temasek and Kasanah combined. Altogether, there are about 143 SOEs, in 13 sectors of the economy, including energy, mining, financial services, manufacturing, transportation, construction, real estate, and others. SOE as a group has a significant impact on Indonesia development, including infrastructure building, poverty eradication, and financial inclusion. Over the past few years, the SOE have performed well in line with the nation's development. This is also because of President Jokowi's program that we have to push the development as much as possible for the 5 years between 2014 and 2019. So the SOE has been operating very strongly in many of the infrastructure projects. Now, total assets have increased rapidly in the past 4 years, and also the capital and expenditure. Total net income has also increased at a pace matching or faster than the GDP growth, as you can see on the slide. And much of the recent growth has been due to SOE transformation program launched in 2015. Our aim is to strengthen SOE participation in Indonesia's regional economic growth. To achieve this goal, we build our strategy on 4 pillars, creating synergy across SOEs, focus on downstreaming industry, increasing local content in all projects, integrating business development, and enabling financial independency and also value creation for each of the SOEs. And SOEs are also accelerating the industrialization and infrastructure development of Indonesia across 5 major areas: electrification, sea, land, air connectivity, mobile, and internet connectivity. As you have seen earlier, these are in line with the National Development Master Plan. The scale of this program are massive. Furthermore, SOE investment are spread across Indonesia from east to west and from north to south. This drives equality and social inclusion while fulfilling our mission as an engine of growth for industry and economic development. One example of SOE accelerating industrialization is the 35,000 megawatt program driven by PLN, which is the national electrical company. Unfortunately, the CEO was unable to come. But we have not just the 35,000 megawatt program, but also additional transmission line of 46,000 kilometers to be built between 2014 until the end of 2019. And so far, we have been able to accelerate this transmission line activities that we have built up to 2017, 12,800 kilometers. And therefore, we're able to increase our electrification from 84% to 95%, the target that we have to reach by 97% at the end of 2019. And we are also expanding the capacity for renewable energies, especially in geothermal and wind farm and also biofuel. As you know, Indonesia being in the, what do you call it, the volcanic area, the capacity for geothermal is around 29,000 megawatts. At the present moment, we only built up to 2,000 megawatts. So this is an area that we want to see that we can expand further. Now, the one that we also did for the past 3 years between from the end 2014 is really strengthening the land connectivity. Basically, we are expanding our toll roads. From the early 70s to 2014, Indonesia has built about 800 kilometers of toll roads. In the past 3 years, we have increased that capabilities about 33%. But the target of President Jokowi that we have to finish additional toll roads that connected from east to west Java, and then from north to south Sumatra, a total of additional 1,580 kilometers of toll roads. So hopefully we should be able to complete that project by the end of 2019. In addition, also the state-owned enterprise is starting to build light rail train, which is connecting between cities, small, what do you call it, megapolitan of Jakarta, but also in the cities. So we built MRTs and LRTs in Jakarta, but also in other cities like Palembang. So that portion of public transport is also expanding in Indonesia. So we are doing more and more of a public transformation using rail. So besides the land connectivity, sea connectivity is also very crucial for Indonesia, which is, you know, a country of many islands. And we actually have the second longest coastline in the world. So the sea connectivity become important if we want to reduce our logistic costs. And we have, in the past 3 years, we have built additional 27 ports that connecting the west and the east of Indonesia, which have allowed us to reduce logistic costs by about more than 4%. Before, it was the cost of logistics was quite high, about 24. Now it's down about 20, but we have to be able to reduce it to about 15%. So this and additional future program, what is also crucial, of course, is the connectivity of air. It becomes instrumental because if you connect island to island, the people, they prefer now because of the middle class of Indonesia is also growing. At the present moment, I think it's about growing to about 5 million almost every year. So the usage of air transportation also is growing significantly. Our biggest effort, which is Soekarno-Hatta, now on a yearly basis, now this 2017 has 62 million passengers. In 2016, it was around 57 million. So we see that Soekarno-Hatta, the Jakarta International and Domestic Airport, very soon, if we don't watch it, if we don't have built additional airport close by, it's going to probably be as busy as London Heathrow. And so these are also the potential for growth in Indonesia, is building up more airports. Besides that, of course, then telecommunication is crucial. I always say that Indonesia is very lucky that the world has found mobile phones technology, has internet technology, because a country such as Indonesia of 17,000 islands, the best communication is through mobile and internet. Therefore, we are continuing expanding our linkage of fiber optics. Now our fiber optic connection between the island is, I think, about 90,000 kilometers, but we also is linking Indonesia to the world. Now we are building fiber optic connectivity to other parts of the world. Now, I think internationally, we have connectivity for fiber optic of 65,000 kilometers, and domestic almost 90,000 kilometers. And most crucial also, as you know, is the towers for the mobile. So now, you know, before, very difficult to connect Jakarta to a small village in Papua. Now we can connect ourselves there. So people, as you know, through Instagram, through WhatsApp or Facebook, now they can sell products, and that really helps the growth of the economy in the rural areas. So as I presented about Indonesia and a little bit about SOEs, what we have done, now of course I would like to invite you to invest in Indonesia with us. You know, SOE has, as mentioned earlier, has many, many projects in the pipeline. Just on toll roads, We are, as you know, we are building about 1,580 kilometers. It's about $15 billion investment. So what we're doing now, some of the brown projects of toll roads we have completed and now is in operation, we plan to sell down. So we have more funds to for finishing up our greenfield projects on the toll roads. Then, of course, the energy, 35,000 megawatts. Now we have in the progress of building about 20,000 megawatts. So we are still looking at partners for additional finishing up the 35,000 megawatt, but especially for the more renewable energy, such as the geothermal, the wind farm. We have just finished one project, wind farm project in Sulawesi, where GE was providing the technology and OPIC is providing the financing. So these are the types of investment that we're looking at. And of course, you know, the head of Pertamina, which is the holding company for our oil and gas, is here. She's looking for partners for refineries, LNGs, and also the upstream investment. Mining is another area. As you know, Indonesia is quite rich in minerals. We have bauxite, we have nickel, we have many different, as you know, we also have gold that we are still in final negotiation with Freeport. But now what we're concentrating also is going into downstream of those minerals. So we are building smelters for, you know, alumina and also for the nickel. So, and also looking even more downstream into stainless steel and aluminum products. So these are the many, many investment possibilities. Also, as you know, Indonesia is being an island base, of course, so we have beautiful beaches. So now we are building a resort area in the island of Lombok, which is next to Bali, because we feel Bali is now quite crowded. We need to have a new destination. So the state-owned has embarked on a tourist resort area in Lombok, which is a 1,000-hectare area, which is called Mandalika. And so we are inviting hotels and entertainment groups to come in and develop with us. So if you see the presentation, you can see that President Joko Widodo, by the end of 2014, when October 2014, when he started his administration, concentration completely is on infrastructure, connectivity, and electrification. Why? Because he believes that Indonesia has to go into the industrialization era. And to do that, and we need a lot of investment, we need a lot of foreign investors to build our nation. So to do that, we have to ensure that Indonesia is attractive enough. Attractive that the connectivity is easy, so logistic cost becomes cheap, so it's easy to go to get raw material. And for any industry, you need energy, which is electrification. So these are the things that are being done, and why a lot of it is being done of the state-owned is wanting to ensure that it has to be done on time. Some of the difficulties in Indonesia in the past is that land acquisition. So that's why the state-owned enterprise is being embarking or requesting, is being pushed to do all these projects so that we can be completed by the end of 2019 with the hope that, you know, investors is confident of going into Indonesia. Because before, we're quite behind as compared to Thailand, compared to Malaysia in infrastructure availabilities in terms of roads, in terms of electricity. So this way, we hope that we can invite investors to Indonesia at ease because they feel comfortable that connectivity is easy and also electricity is in abundance. So hopefully this, because as you know, Indonesia with 262 million people is actually the largest nation within Southeast Asia. we actually represent about 45% of the population, which means that the local market is also quite big. The middle class is being predicted by 2030 we reach about 120 to 130 million, which is a significant number. So hopefully this way then, you know, many industries will look into Indonesia as their manufacturing base for the Indonesian market, but also for, not just for the Indonesian market, but also for the South Asian market. So basically that's my presentation, Amy. I hope it's interesting enough for everybody. Thank you very much.
But a really great overview of the strategic role of state-owned enterprises and the economic prospects and opportunities in Indonesia. Let me ask you about U.S. Indonesia economic relations. I think we can all agree that our bilateral economic relationship is not living up to its potential.
Yeah.
So what do you think can be done on both sides to invigorate deeper economic ties, trade and investment, and otherwise?
I think what is needed more, I think, is a lot more communication, Amy. Mm-hmm. Because I remember when it was in the 90s, there's a lot of communication, I think, mm-hmm. in the early 90s, you know? Mm-hmm. And the banks, for example, like I was in Citibank, there's more interest, interestingly, you know, during that time. And then Indonesia, after the crisis in 98,
yeah.
then it started to really slow down quite a bit. The only company, I think the only one that is continuously to be there, to be honest with you, was GE. It's GE. And until now, GE is still there. We bought locomotive from GE. We have power plants with GE. But that's about it. It's unfortunate because I find that, I don't know whether it's because America is also so big that, you know, a lot of the company concentrate on the development within the countries. Mm. Because for example, like port development or port management, the one that is very aggressive now, at least in Southeast Asia, is basically Japan and China.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one or two European companies and European countries, yeah, but more Japan and China for ports. But for airports, a lot of European companies.
Yeah.
But not American either.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's probably the understanding, maybe the opportunities yeah. that is there, and also the fact that more middle class are created in Southeast Asia now, that it becomes hopefully that it becomes more interesting
yeah.
for American companies to look at, because maybe before they prefer like China or India, maybe, I don't know.
I've talked to a number of firms who are very interested in Indonesia. You mentioned the digital economy, and I think there is a real growing recognition that Indonesia provides such an opportunity for high-tech firms that are engaged in the digital economy. To be honest, what they often say is they're very interested in investing in Indonesia, but they still have a lot of difficulties with non-tariff barriers and regulatory hurdles. Now, President Jokowi has made that a focus of his administration to really try to take on some structural reform and make it easier to invest. And I know this isn't directly your current role, but can you share with us, I mean, how, you know, Indonesia does have a little bit of a reputation of being a little bit of a protectionist economy. So is there, do you see movement on that front? Do you think a second term of President Jokowi, if he were to win re-election, we'd see more focus in that area?
I think even before the second term, I mean, even presently, President Jokowi has been pushing on the reducing the tariffs, providing more, incentive for foreign investors to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And most importantly, what he's now pushing is, for example, the state to open up and put pressure on the regulator
to ensure that they can invite investors. For example, we you know, as you know, we're managing the big airports in Indonesia are managed by state-owned. Mm-hmm. So President Jokowi is pushing me, and that's why we're preparing it, is that you know, we have to have partners on the airports. But the regulatory issues make it difficult for foreign investors to come in. So that's why we are opening up our airports in terms of saying to the regulatory board, like the Ministry of Transportation, hey, you have to change this, this, this. So this way, then foreign investor can come in. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, by doing that, in the futures, the foreign investors can come in on their own. So the state-owned is now being the beside doing many of the projects. We are now is in the forefront of inviting investors. At the same time, seeing the hurdles that you've been saying. That needs to be changed. Mm-hmm. So you know, regulatory on the ports, regulatory on the airport, regulatory mm-hmm. on the railways. It's now we are pushing it to change so that people can come in. Mm-hmm. You know, foreign investors can come in because mm-hmm. a lot of, as you know, you're right. A lot of the regulation is quite protective, mm-hmm. make it difficult. So now the state-owned. Is trying to find partners at the same time on changing the regulatory issues because this way, for example, on the airports we are offering two airports in North Sumatra and one, as I mentioned earlier, in Lombok, and presently is managed by us completely, mm-hmm. and we just did investment in there. But then we are inviting foreign airports operators, and they're helping us. Hey, if this is the regulatory position, we cannot come in. Mm-hmm. So they're helping us with their, for example, one Zurich airport. He has done a number of investment in different countries. So they're helping us in providing things that we need to change. If we want to be as competitive as the other airports in the world. So those are things are hopefully by 2019, I think this will help investors mm-hmm. to come in.
Great. You also talk quite a bit about connectivity, infrastructure mm-hmm. development. That's obviously been something you've been heavily engaged in. And we were talking before this forum about investment by China, Japan, other yeah. countries in infrastructure. Can you tell us about your investment discussions with China and what the upsides and downsides are with working with Beijing and how it compares to other countries?
Well, Indonesia has been doing a lot with Japan, yeah? Mm-hmm. In, for example, ports, doing a few with ports and power plants also with Japan. With China is that it helps Indonesia that China is getting aggressive, so we get better conditions or better structure from Japan, including the financing and so mm-hmm. forth. Yeah, mm-hmm. But with China, you really have to be a lot more stricter in terms of labor mm-hmm. because they want to have a lot of their laborers to come in, so we have to, you know, we have to agree on the limit number of labor. Mm-hmm. They are very generous when it comes to financing. They provide very long-term financing at a very low rate. But these are the things that, you know, the labor, and we have to ensure that the technology transfer is being done and so forth. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a. This is the first time that we are having a big project with China is our high-speed railway mm-hmm. between Jakarta and Bandung. It's around 147 kilometers. So we learn a lot there. And Tumiono, where is he? Pak Tumiono. Oh yeah, he's now responsible on negotiating every step with China on mm-hmm. the projects. Mm-hmm. And it's very crucial to ensure that it doesn't go cost overrun because mm-hmm. that is a tendency that happens, and mm-hmm. and a little bit different than with Japan. Yeah. Hmm.
Okay, let me open it up for questions from the audience. If there are questions, please raise your hand and we will get a microphone to you. There's a woman in the back. And when you get the microphone, could you please identify yourself and then ask a brief question? Is that?
Thank you for your presentation. My name is Maya Narumi. I'm with the Japan-U.S. Friendship Commission. I had a question in regards to the five different goals that you mentioned earlier in the presentation. One of them was to improve the energy and food resources, I believe. And Indonesia, I believe, is one of the most largest like palm oil production countries. And so a lot of, I guess, foreign investors are coming into the country. In the long term, effects in terms of environment, how does palm oil, like the palm oil industry, impact the environment of Indonesia? Yes.
Well, the palm oil, why we went also here, goes into the palm oil industry, besides our region is very good for palm oil production. It's also part of the Indonesian program for poverty eradication. Because, you know, besides, okay, we have a few big corporations in the palm industry, but quite significant small farmers, which basically part of our transmigration program to move people from Java to outer parts of the country. And, you know, by them, the farmers, they get about five hectares of land for palm oil. It increased their income quite significantly. So what we're doing now also in palm oil is that realizing the fact that, you know, some countries is not too happy with palm oil, we are also trying to increase the usage of palm oil domestically. So now the government has imposed a policy that I think starting next month, all biofuel, diesel fuel is 20% palm oil. It has to be mixed, so they call it B20. But the target is it's going to be B100, which we plan to process the palm oil into a green fuel, which that's why one of the, actually one of the plans me coming here, but I didn't have the opportunity, is to look at this technology to develop the palm oil into green fuel, which I think I heard, Amy, this is one of the other things that I might ask your assistant. We heard that Honeywell has that technology, and there's another two companies in Europe. So these are the plans going forward. So not just using palm oil for vegetable oil, but also developing into a green fuel in the future.
Hmm. Okay, other questions? Ambassador Blake?
Bob Blake, former U.S. ambassador to Indonesia. nice to see you again, Ibu Rini.
Yeah, nice to see you.
Welcome
too,
to Washington. thanks for a terrific presentation. That was really very informative. I wanted to pick up on some of the challenges and opportunities that you mentioned in your presentation. You talked about how now the president is very focused on reducing inequality, as we are here in the United States as well. And you also, I was very happy to hear that you talked about how logistics costs are coming down now because of the various investments that you're making. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit more about that, and also the extent to which that presents more of an opportunity for manufacturing in Indonesia, because really, if you look at the statistics, the percentage of manufacturing as a percentage of GDP has stayed roughly stable for the last 25 years. So if you can get that number up a little bit, that will really help to reduce poverty, reduce inequality, and so forth. And the logistics has always been the kind of problem for manufacturing. And, you know, to be fair, we have American companies who do well there. Nike is there. We have some toy companies. We have Procter & Gamble. So the manufacturing is going on. But just talk a little bit more about the logistics part of it, and also where you sort of see the future manufacturing opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Before, as you know, you were in Indonesia. So before, manufacturing was also significantly concentrated in Jakarta area. So labor cost becomes higher. So now what we're trying to do is building different industrial zoning, industrial estate in Central Java, in Sumatra, so that the land is cheaper, the labor is cheaper, but the connectivity is there. Previously, you can't connect, the connectivity from west to east Java was very difficult. Now, by the end of 2018, from Merak, which is the one end of Java Island, into Probolinggo, which is the east eastern part, will be fully connected. And by the end of 2019, Banyuwangi, which is the other end of Java, which is about only seven kilometers from Bali, but divided by sea, will be connected. And that helps on logistic costs. And so we hope that industries, manufacturers, will looking into Indonesia because the cost of manufacturing becomes cheaper. Because the logistic cost is cheaper, then they can also be resided in a place where the labor cost is much cheaper. And these are the things that President Jokowi wants to do. He wants to complete all this before the end of 2019, so that Indonesia becomes very competitive when it comes to manufacturing. Base for many companies, especially like American companies. Besides them, for manufacturing base, not just for Indonesian market, but also for other parts of the world. Before, for example, Nike, you're talking about them in the manufacturing base for them to sell outside because the Indonesian market was not big enough. So we hope also we continue on developing our nation equality in all parts of the country. The potential for the domestic market is also big enough, so that manufacturers would be interested to look into Indonesia to produce products for Indonesian market, but also for the global market, because then the economies of scale have been reached. So this is what we hope we can do in the future. And if you look at the programs, actually I was very surprised, Amy, that your inequality, actually U.S. is very high. Mm-hmm. We are not as rich as you are, but when it comes to inequality, we're better off than you. That is the fact. You know, the fact that we call it the Gini ratio. As you know, the Gini ratio, ours is better because we're probably a lot more of us is probably more more spread out. Well, here you have very people who's really up there and still people below. And I think inequality is very crucial. And President Jokowi put this as his number one agenda, ensuring that we eradicate inequality, especially before President Jokowi Dodo. The inequality is really felt between the western part of Indonesia and the eastern part. Mm. There were very minimal development in the eastern part. Mm-hmm. We have now concentrated significantly in developing in the eastern part. Mm-hmm. Papua, for example, during President Joko Widodo's presidency, starting in 2015, so we hope we'll be able to finish it by 2019, we are connecting 2,680 kilometers of roads, national roads, it's not toll roads, so regular roads, which before it wasn't done. And we're building total, basically enabling. Before we have like small airports, but it's very difficult to land there after 12 noon because of the weather and everything. Now we put in, so we have a total of about 60 airports in Papua, small airports. that we enable so that people can travel. Before, it was not even part of the main radar of the budget. So now, President Joko really put a lot of effort for the eastern part. Sulawesi also. Sulawesi is very abundant when it comes to mining and also sea products such as seaweed and fishes and so forth. So we are also expanding the roads there, and also we are also building toll roads there. So the purpose is really ensuring that investors, foreign investors, have choices within Indonesia to be able to have their manufacturing base there. And we are now continuing pushing this whole thing of ease of doing business in Indonesia. Mm-hmm. It's now 191. Hopefully, we're pushing down, hopefully, to below 50 before of the end of 2019. Also, for the fact that we feel that Indonesia, as the biggest nation in Southeast Asia, has really have to be in a stronger position than the other countries from Southeast Asia.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we have a question here. Sorry, this woman here in the third row.
Selamat sore, Ibu. My name is Donna Priyadi from GE Indonesia.
Yeah, you're from GE. See, I'm already saying you're one of the ones who's always there.
First of all, exactly, we would like to say thank you very much for acknowledging us. GE has been in Indonesia for more than 70 years, yeah. And we've been partners with SOEs like
yeah,
PLN and Dirgantara Indonesia.
The point is, Bob, yes, there's Procter Gamble and there's Nike, but the point is the one that is in partnership with SOE is only GE, okay?
Thank you, Ibu. And we are planning to expand our partnership with more SOEs for years to come. And my question is there any incentives from the government for the ease of doing business and to promote localizations, for instance, in terms of customs or tax, so our partnership not only can enter Indonesian market, but also expand to the region, to regions and to other Asian countries, or even further to, you know, to the rest of the world?
Thank you. Yeah. We are now tax holidays is being pushed. The tax holidays I think is 20 years now. If we are even pushing now even further, now we are on the works is that if you do export from the country, it can be reducing your. We are now calculating the fact that if you exporting for our country, you get incentives, and also if you have a number of laborers, you know, like say 1,000 laborer, then you also have incentives. Those are the ones that are in the works. So hopefully that, you know, we are looking at other countries, to be honest, the incentive that they do, and what we want to do, we just want to do more than, we want to give more than the other countries. So hopefully you come more to Indonesia.
I think we have time for one last question, and I saw Vikram here, Vikram Nehru, in the second row here.
Well, thank you very much. I also want to thank you for your terrific presentation. I want to come to the main thrust of what you said, which is inviting foreign investors, yes, private investors, to help you with your infrastructure program. Now, one of the features of infrastructure is that it's long-term.
Yeah.
And no matter how much you try in ensuring that the contracts between private investors and state enterprises can anticipate problems down the road, there will always inevitably be problems which you cannot anticipate. That's just in the nature of the business. These are complex, long-term projects.
Yeah.
So dispute resolution becomes a very important feature mm-hmm. of successful public-private partnerships. And one of the challenges that Indonesia faces, as indeed do many other developing countries, is the quality of the justice system, quality of the judiciary, and their ability to resolve disputes between disputing parties. In fact, even though the doing business indicators show Indonesia has made a lot of progress, when it comes to enforcing contracts, alas, it hasn't been doing as well. So this is an Achilles heel, in a sense, and one of the reasons why perhaps it's GE and not too many other enterprises that are working with you. So the question is, what can be done about this? This is a difficult long-term problem, I understand, but it's a key issue.
Yeah, the other thing is, I think the other, now that is in the works also, is the law, the decree. Yeah, not criminal code. Criminal code. Yeah. So we are now working with the parliament to changing that, because we are still used now the base of the law during from the colonial time, which is the Dutch law, which is quite a long time. So it doesn't seem to fit anymore, and that's what makes it difficult for. Many of the disputes. That's why sometimes the contract, many arbitrage wants to do it in Singapore and so forth, because of all these issues. And so it's in the works on changing that. And hopefully also it has to be done before the end of 2019. So we realize that. That's one of the reasons why people are afraid of coming into Indonesia, so some of the other disputes that we're facing. And then President Jokowi is also very keen on changing this law. And now it's in the discussion with the parliament. Hopefully we can get it done before the end of 2019.
Well, thank you for that really terrific overview of the Indonesian economy, U.S.-Indonesia relations, and state-owned enterprises. We're going to be moving now into our next portion of the program, which is a public reception to formally launch our CSIS BNI collaboration. And before I ask you all to join me in thanking Ibu Rini, I think there's an announcement, so let me turn to Andreka.
Her Excellency Rini Sumarno would like to present a token of her appreciation to Dr. Amy Searight.
Thank you.
Oh, it says I'm giving it to you. Okay. Okay, well, this is an Indonesian.
Oh, thank you. Oh,
that's this is an Indonesian art. Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Thank you very much, thank you for your remarks. Yeah. And everyone, please join me in thanking Ibu Rini, and join us for the reception. Yeah. Thank you. This is lovely.